A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 323. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Terrahawks. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we are with an ITV series that ran for three different series from 1983 to 1986. 13 episodes in a series, so that's a total of 39 episodes running about 25 minutes each. And as regular listeners know, we like once a year to try and cover something from Gerry Anderson. And here comes that frequently, probably overused phrase of mine, the wonderful worlds of Anderson-related shows, Brian.
Very nice. We have already covered the 1960s Super Marionation series, all of the science fiction Super Marionation series that Gerry Anderson produced. It took us a while to get through all of those. And now we are looking at his return to puppetry in the 1980s in something he called Super Macromation.
Yes, and we'll get into the details of what that exactly involves in a little while when we get to production notes.
Oh, yes. So the setup for this, in the year 2020, the Earth is under threat from the evil Zelda, and a secret force known as the Terrahawks defend the Earth from a series of threats.
Absolutely, and the impossibly far future of 2020 when the show first came out in 1983, Brian. But here we are, we're very close, and we don't seem to have any Terrahawks yet. But in this show, they are operating from their base in South America and also from space, of course. And they have an interesting mix of characters in the crew, but they also will be, as we would expect, the typical Gerry Anderson super vehicles. And this time we've got an unusual extra. We've had individual robots in some Anderson shows, but here we have a whole host of Zeroid specialist robotic assistants for the Terrahawks to talk about.
Yes, we do. So it has a lot of the typical Gerry Anderson puppet show things that we're used to, and some different things as well. So the characters, Dr. Tiger Ninestein is the ninth clone created by Dr. Stein. Ninestein is the leader of the Terrahawks and their head pilot, voiced by Jeremy Hitchin.
Yes, and the Wikipedia page, which I think is something that was said on one of the sort of bonus features on the DVDs, mentions that Hitchin was attempting a Jack Nicholson voice for this character. I can't say I particularly noticed that, Brian.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that either, but it is sort of a character voice for sure.
Okay, other characters. We've got his second in command, Captain Mary Falconer, who is the pilot of the Battlehawk vehicle, voiced by the actress Denise Breyer, using her own voice for this particular character.
And then we have Captain Kate Kestrel, who is the pilot of the Hawkwing, and also an internationally famous pop star, as, you know, of course she is, with a variety of wigs in different colors. So she has a pink afro at times and what have you. Voiced by Ann Riddler.
Not the first time we've discussed the Gerry Anderson show with wonderfully colored wigs, Brian.
Yeah, at this point, Sylvia Anderson was no longer involved in these productions. The Andersons had long since divorced, and she was working on her own things with a very successful career in TV. But her influence of the colorful wigs and things of that type, I think, lived on in the Anderson team.
Absolutely, Sylvia's legacy. Of course, we've got our main baddie, and this is the fabulous character of Zelda, who I've described as a space witch, but her backstory is actually she's an android created to protect a space prince somewhere, but her desire, her sort of monomaniacal desire to conquer everything, led her to lead an android rebellion, and she has destroyed the Earth base on Mars and is now leading the attacks on Earth. And she is also marvellously voiced by Denise Breyer, but here, of course, not using her own voice, using a character voice that's highly appropriate for this sort of witchy-looking character who's actually an android, Brian.
Yes, wonderfully evil, cackling voice. Not stepping back from that at all, going fully into that. Sergeant Major Zero is the leader of the Zeroid Robot Corps, voiced by Windsor Davies, I believe in a similar way to another TV role of his, Eamon.
Yes, now this is a show you're probably not familiar with, Brian, that was perhaps inexplicably popular over here in the 70s, It Ain't Half Hot Mum, in which this was a military show in which Windsor Davies played the Sergeant Major, and he's doing a very similar voice here as Sergeant Major Zero. It certainly is a good performance. It's, I think it's in a better show than It Ain't Half Hot Mom, which has got an awful lot of problems attached to it, which we won't go into here, I think.
Okay. Yeah, the Zeroids are an interesting creation, and we'll talk about them a bit more later, but they're spherical robots that are sort of like soldiers. You know, they take the role of soldiers and move by rolling and bouncing around. So it's quite an unusual, odd little thing to have in here.
It is indeed. I don't think it's ever quite explained how they actually motivate the moving and bouncing, but there you go. That's robots for you, I guess.
Yeah, they're also able to change their mass. So, yeah, there's a lot going on with those that we don't understand.
So let's continue with a little bit of Terrahawk's action. As I've said, in many ways, Terrahawk's quite a typical Anderson show because of its range of fantastic vehicles, sort of fighter jets, battle tanks, space stations, and of course space vehicles as well to resist the threats from space coming from Zelda and her wonderful sort of creations. We get some familiar sort of scenarios, so we get situations where super trains or super spaceships are endangered or on a runaway course or are heading for Earth and have to be diverted or destroyed or sort of taken back into control by the Terrahawks. But we've got, I think, an addition this time for a Gerry Anderson puppet show, because we also have Zelda and her terrifying menagerie of monsters from space that she brings in. Some increasingly weird-looking creatures as the show progresses, Brian.
Yeah, Zelda and the others as the threat in this are maybe most reminiscent of what we had in Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons, where you had sort of one group that was threatening in each episode in a different way each time. This is different than that, but it's a little bit reminiscent, I think.
Yes, and sort of the similar idea of the base on Mars being the first casualty of the war between Zelda and the Terrahawks.
That's right. We also, as we mentioned, have these Zeroids, which are these spherical robots that are sort of the foot soldiers. They roll around. They have eyes which can be covered when they roll, but, you know, eyes that sort of move around in odd ways. And each one has its own personality. Each one has its own accent, which gets to be a little odd and not great in some cases. But they definitely are sort of separate characters, and they have quite a few of them there.
And there is a sort of suggestion that they develop these characters as they sort of, you know, go along. And that Ninestein, who finds them irritating at times, does occasionally talk about sort of wiping them and resetting them to standard. So there's a little sort of suggestion of a sort of artificial intelligence going on there, developing its own character, I guess, Brian.
And as an opposite number to the Zeroids, Zelda has these cube robots which come up against the Zeroids at times. And in the closing credits, we see the cube robots and the Zeroids in Knots and Crosses or Tic-Tac-Toe game at the end of the credits, and which one wins depends on which episode you're looking at.
Yes, a varied and interesting little quirk of the end credits for us.
Yeah, and I haven't figured out if it was one sequence for each season or if it was varied more often than that, but there are a couple of versions of that at any rate.
Okay, so it's probably time we looked at the production of Terrorhawks, and as ever with an Anderson show, I guess there's quite a bit of detail to talk about, Brian.
Absolutely. Terrorhawks was produced by Jerry Anderson with his production partner for the 80s and 90s, Christopher Burr. The two of them also did Dick Spanner PI, which we've also talked about. They produced together, and they produced Space Precinct together, too. We haven't talked about that one.
Yet, perhaps, yes.
Indeed.
So, with Jerry Anderson, as you've said, Brian, in the 1960s, we're talking Super Mario Nation. His last Super Mario Nation show in 1969 was The Secret Service, which we have covered. In the 1970s, we have visited a lot of this content because then he moved into live action shows, particularly UFO, a show called The Protectors, Space 1999, of course, and The Day After Tomorrow. And of course, he also was involved with a movie, particularly his movie The Dark Side of the Sun, sometimes known as Doppelganger. But in the 80s, he's returning to children's television and he's looking to explore some new techniques, some of which involve stop motion type animation, particularly, I suppose, Dick Spanner PI, but also glove puppetry here, Brian.
Yeah, and part of this was related to the fact that, you know, the days of Lou Grade commissioning things for London Weekend Television and the larger budgets that brought, those were gone. And doing the Super Marionation with marionettes, that takes a long time to set up. It takes a lot of people, and for what they're doing, it is a fairly expensive thing. And they were looking for something that was not quite as budget intensive, that didn't require the expensive and complicated setups for this new series. So what they moved to were these hand puppets that had possibly more realistic latex faces, sort of a different kind of look to them. And this is what was given the name Super Macromation.
Yes, Jerry Anderson always good at coming up with these sort of different names for his shows that would be, filmed in Super Marionation or Super Macromation would come up as part of the titles, which was always great fun. And of course, this changes the type of puppetry. So instead of the Super Marionation shows, where you're probably familiar with some of the background or behind the scenes shots from those famous studios in Slough of a raised gantry above the set where the puppeteers would be operating the string puppets or the wire puppets, here they have raised up sets, more like, I suppose, stuff that we'd be familiar with from The Muppet Show or I guess even The Storyteller from Jim Henson. So here we have the operators below the sets with one hand operating the puppet's head and then another hand to perhaps operate the puppet's hand with a rod or something similar to that. And you do see some of the behind the scenes shots on the DVD extras that we're going to talk about in a minute. And it's probably worth mentioning that the chief puppeteer on Terrorhawks was still Christine Glanville, the sort of very well-known puppeteer who'd been long associated with Jerry Anderson shows right the way through the 60s.
Yeah, she was always very good and did a lot of puppetry work. So that is nice to see her still involved at this point in the 80s as well.
So we have the episodes written by Gerry Anderson himself, Tony Barwick, a longtime collaborator, Donald James, and Trevor Lansdowne, although the writers seem to adopt pseudonyms for the credits, often sort of aping the Tiger Ninestein naming convention. So you often see the writer's name ending in some sort of Stein at the end of it as a little in-joke for the production.
That may have been to distance themselves a little bit, or to make it look like they had a few more writers than they had. You know, games like that show up on these things occasionally.
They do indeed. And we've got the directors, Tony Bell, Tony Lenny, Alan Patillo, and Desmond Saunders. And perhaps slightly unusually for an Anderson show, we have music composed by Richard Harvey for Terrorhawks.
Yeah, sadly, we didn't have Barry Gray, who was working with Gerry Anderson doing music from the very early days, right up through the first season of Space 1999. Barry Gray had done a lot of music there. He passed away in 1984, and they were, of course, working on Terrorhawks before that. But by that point, Barry Gray was not working with Gerry Anderson, and we do miss having him on a Gerry Anderson show.
Yes, we do, actually. Yes, sadly missed some great theme tunes he wrote.
Yes, and Derek Meddings, who worked on the miniatures work for vehicles and explosions and things of that sort, he worked with Anderson also from the very early days up through UFO. I don't believe he did any work on Space 1999, and he didn't work on Terrorhawks either. By this time, he was working on the James Bond films and the Superman films. He had sort of moved over to doing big movie productions.
Yes, a very successful move up for Derek Meddings, and you know what remarkable work he did over the years.
The Zeroid robots were also done as puppets, but they were done in an unusual way. They were done with footballs or soccer balls that would be painted, and they could be rolled down a corridor set, or they could be sitting on something and knocked off of it, and then the film is reversed so it looks like they're sort of flying up in the air and landing on something. And then they would use puppets for them when you have the close-ups with the eyes moving around and this sort of thing.
Yes, they are rather, I mean, the actual appearance of the Zeroids is rather charming, and the way they move around is quite fun. I mean, clearly some of it, as you say, Brian, is reversed filming. But yeah, the movement is sort of charming. We'll talk a little bit more about the characters and voices in the next episode, perhaps.
Yeah, the concept of what they are is quite bizarre, but the look of them and how they move around and how they look on screen is fairly slick. It's actually not bad for a production of this type.
Okay, we've mentioned the end credit sequence. We also have a title sequence which shows a video game being played and then interrupted by Tiger Ninestein's emergency broadcast. And of course, for the video game, we get some very nice looking sort of 80s computer graphics, except of course, they weren't computer graphics. It was hand-drawn cell animation. And that was the same for the Zeroids versus the Cubes tic-tac-toe games in the end credits. And we've seen this before, of course, Brian, because famously, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy animations for the actual guide itself look like the computer graphics. But as we know from when we covered that show, so many years ago, 10 years ago or more, Brian, they were also hand-drawn cell animations for there, I believe.
Yes, they were. And this is reminiscent of that. It's not as elaborate and sort of as bound into the storytelling as the Hitchhiker's animations were. And this was a little bit later, but it has very much the same feel. And you do see some of it in the episodes as well, where Tiger Ninestein will be playing a game on screen, and he's constantly trying to get to his high score and missing it by 1 point and this sort of thing. So that is something that they have bound into part of the look of it, as this is what computer graphics look like in this world.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, the US release used a different version of the end credits that had a Kate Kestrel song on it. And when it was sold to Japan, they produced their own animated titles for it, which are in a more anime-type style. And that's available on YouTube. You can see it there.
And it is worth a look, actually, Brian. I mean, if you know, if anybody's interested in Japanese anime-type cartoons, particularly the television ones from the 70s and 80s, looking at the Terrorhawks version, I'll try and link it on the Facebook group when this episode comes out. It's quite fun.
Yes, absolutely. Terrorhawks was shot on 16mm film and filmed in three 13-episode series, which ran on the ITV network from 1983 through 1986. And because it was not a Lou Grade production, it was not on ITC, it was not part of the 1990s rebroadcasts of the Super Mario Nation shows. So it wasn't really part of that sort of renaissance of Super Mario Nation and Gerry Anderson puppet shows that happened in the 90s. This one was sort of left out of that.
Yes, you may remember from our previous episodes that shows like Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet had a second come-in in the 1990s and became very popular again. As you've said, Brian, Terrorhawks, slightly different ownership, slightly different distribution deals, so didn't get that redistribution in the 90s. And that does come into play, I think, in a moment when we get to availability of this show.
I think you're right, yeah. So let's talk about the availability.
Okay, well, you know, with an Anderson show, it is usually, thankfully, quite easy to get hold of it. So here in Region 2, there were some VHS releases in the late 1980s that repackaged, I think, 6 episodes on one VHS tape. Obviously, those are long ago and far away and gone. Then there's quite a bit of a gap because of this, you know, different distribution deal until we get to the 2000s. And in fact, there was a 2012 DVD release. But then in 2017, our old friends Network DVD put out an extremely comprehensive DVD and Blu-ray box set, featuring, Brian, more bonus features than I think I've ever seen on any box set that we've talked about. There are 9 discs and 3 of them are taken up with bonus features, interviews, behind the scenes footage, audio episodes, PDFs, all sorts of stuff on there. It's I haven't been able to see all of the extra features, I'm afraid.
Yeah, they really put them in on this one, didn't they?
They did. And it's currently, that is £21 here on DVD and surprisingly only £18 on Blu-ray, which seems a bit of a bargain. But also, unusually for an Anderson show, I don't think we've come across this with the other shows. This one is available by individual episodes or series on Amazon Video. Currently $1.49 for an episode here, which might be interesting if you just want to sample one or two episodes with your family. But really, that Blu-ray at £18, just packed with features, and of course all 39 episodes, that seems quite a good deal here in Region 2. Over the pond in Region 1, Brian?
Over here, it has of course been released. On Amazon.com, there's a complete DVD series and also Blu-ray for about $38. And that, I believe, has the same set of things on it as the UK release. I haven't done a full comparison, but it looked like a similar type of thing. And on Amazon Video, it's available for 99 cents an episode. Amazon.ca had 3 separate Blu-ray sets for about $15 each. And this does change from time to time exactly what's available and what the prices are. But it definitely is available. So if you want to look at Terrorhawks, you certainly can.
Excellent stuff. So it's widely available, which I guess is going to wrap up most of our first episode about this show, Brian. So do come back and join us next time when we're going to pick out a few episodes or at least a few story themes from Terrorhawks to give you a bit more idea of the content. As with any Gerry Anderson show, there were spin-offs, and we always like to try and cover the spin-offs briefly for any show we cover, so we will be talking about those. And of course, we're going to get to our own feelings about this show and compare it with all those wonderful Super Marionation shows we talked about. And we may even drift slightly towards the Uncanny Valley, just to give you a teaser for next time as well.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting things to talk about here. I certainly want to talk about some of the comparisons between some of the 60s shows from Gerry Anderson and Terrorhawks. There's a lot to get into for this one, for sure. So there should be plenty to talk about next time. Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, where all of our shows are available. Gerry Anderson shows, many of them, and all of the others, well over 300 episodes. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group, where we have lots of good discussions going on, and I'm sure we'll be talking about Terrorhawks.
Indeed we will. And you can also find British Invaders as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, where we are proud members. Find more details at vognetwork.com. That's the place to go for that.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and this is Eamon in England saying, please stay on this channel.